Today we began to talk about the mitzvah of Mila. Today we're going to continue to talk about a shaila that comes up, and this is something that is of extreme relevance when we have a bris mila of an adult, but it's relevant to a bris mila of a young child as well, and that is, when one performs the mitzvah of bris mila, is it allowed to be done while using anesthesia? Can we put the person who is having the procedure done under anesthesia, that they should not feel the pain of the incision that's being done, of the procedure that is being done? So this was a question that was raised by the Aderis in his Sefer Over Oreach, which is a fascinating Sefer on its own. For anyone who's never seen it, this is what it is. It's a beautiful Sefer that the Aderis took a diary of all the different guests, all the visitors who used to pass through his village, and he used to have conversations with them about various topics that were on his mind, and he just wrote it all down. It's a very beautiful Sefer because it's just has very different kinds of ideas. So the Aderes writes that somebody passed through and they were talking to him. B'mashakara echad she'avosav himiru rachmana litzlan. He says there was somebody whose parents stopped to be practicing Jews. V'oso aben, and they had a child, but the community ganvu mecheikimo. The community somehow smuggled the child away from his parents. V'niskado ben ha'yisraelim, and this child was raised in the regular Jewish community where he was born. Ach lo nimal adayin, the child never got a bris mila. Nobody ever thought to give him a bris. They didn't realize that the child, when he was born, didn't have one. Now the child becomes an adult. He realizes he never had a bris mila. Va'ata kvar nia le'ish, now he's an adult. Ve'rotze me'od lamalas atzma ach misyare, but he's afraid, he's concerned, mipnei tzar hamila. He's afraid that the procedure is going to cause him so much pain, he's not going to be able to handle it. Verotze lasas ba'atzman, he wants to do the same thing that the doctors do, to give some sort of anesthesia, whatever they had at the time. And he wants to know, umuter lasos kein. So the Aderos writes, ve'heshavtiv, and I responded, di'im ishumha, if your only concern is the fact that you're not going to have pain while performing the bris mila, he says, lo iria, I don't know what the problem is. Da'anar kasa ba'torah, where in the Torah does it say, shetzarech davka tzar min hamila? Where does the Torah instruct us, perform a bris mila and make sure that the person who's having the incision done is going to cry while it's being performed? Nowhere does the Torah say that. The Torah just says, perform the bris mila, and here's how to do it. But nowhere are we instructed to make sure that somebody has pain. I did see in the Sefer Piskei Tshuva, not to be confused, nowhere does the Torah say that you have to, yes, have pain. And therefore he says, why would it be necessary that we have to inflict pain when performing the bris mila? If we figure out a way around it, why should it be a problem? There is a Sefer Piskei Tshuva, which was written in Europe, not to be confused with the popular Sefer Piskei Tshuvos nowadays, not the same at all, where again he discusses this issue as well, and he has correspondence with other Rabbanim, and the way he calls it is someone allowed to use Sam HaMayashin? Am I allowed to use the medicine that makes you fall asleep? Shekorin Shluf Trunk, the drink that makes you sleep. So I thought that was interesting. He says that they had such a thing in Europe, and he wants to know, is it permissible to use such a thing or not? So the Aderes, as well as the Piskei Tshuva, write that nowhere does the Torah instruct us that a person has to be in a state of pain when doing the bris mila, and therefore they see nothing wrong with it at all. Rav Moshe Feinstein addresses the question more recently, and Rav Moshe Feinstein quotes from his contemporary, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and he says, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was opposed to making any changes in the mitzvah of bris mila. And therefore he writes, Rav Shlomo Zalman felt that even though it might be nicer to give the child some anesthesia, it's not a good idea because we don't want to do anything that's going to change how the procedure of bris mila is done. We're going to do it the same way we always did it. That's what he quotes. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, I take issue with that. I don't believe that that's the case. Rav Moshe says, if there's something that will make us do the bris mila a little bit more professionally or better, or will be safer for the child, there's no reason not to do it. And therefore Rav Moshe says, I have a different reason why I don't like this this anesthesia idea, and that is because he says it's just not healthy. You're going to put a child under general or local anesthesia, there are risks that are involved, and therefore Moshe says, because it's not healthy, I would suggest not doing it. After all, they say that a child at 8 days old, the body is not fully developed, the nervous system is not fully developed, and the child doesn't really feel so much pain when the bris mila is done. And therefore Moshe says, why would you risk putting the child under anesthesia and maybe causing a detriment to the health of the child by doing so, instead of just doing the bris mila the old way that we used to do it? And however, Moshe says, let's say you have an adult, or you have a child who, for whatever reason, it is going to affect the feelings of the child. He says, absolutely, I would say you should go ahead and give the anesthesia, and there's nothing to even discuss. Dr. Abraham has, in his very important work, Nishmas Avram, which is, for anyone who's interested in any medical issues or medical halacha, the Nishmas Avram is one of the most authoritative svarim that you should have in your library. So he quotes on this issue. He says, look, some claimed that maybe Al-Pi Kabbalah, maybe the Zohar, maybe those kind of svarim say that a bris milah is not just the act itself. You have to also cry. And when the baby cries, everyone, you know, they always make an announcement, you should daven because it's an eis ratzon. So he says, what would a bris milah be without crying? And maybe that's a reason why we should not have the person use any kind of external venue that will take the pain away, because maybe the Svar Makdosh and maybe the Sifre Kabbalah assume that you have to have tsar when performing a bris milah. So he writes in the Nishmas Avram addressing that question. He says, I am not an expert in Kabbalah, he says, and neither were my rabbeim. He says, I didn't consult with people who were. However, he writes, I heard from Rabbi Yosef Vinter, I don't know who that is, Sheshama Mehagon Rabbi Yaakov Hillel, who is a contemporary Mekubal today, Rosh Yeshivas HaMekubalim B'Yerushalayim. Rabbi Yaakov Hillel, I guess, is a credible source when it comes to Kabbalah issues, and he says, we asked him, and he says, Chipes, he looked around, V'lo Matza Bazar HaKadosh V'Sifrei HaKabbalah, he didn't find anywhere in all the Sifrei HaKabbalah, Sheyesh Inyan Miyuchad B'Tzara D'Yanuka. Nowhere does it say that the child has to cry when we perform a bris milah. And therefore, don't come and tell me that you shouldn't use anesthesia because then the child's not going to cry, and what kind of bris milah is it without the child having pain? There is no source that the child has to have pain. And therefore, he writes that he doesn't like it at all. Rabbi Yaakov Hillel added to that something which I think is fascinating. He says, what it does say in the Zohar HaKadosh is that when a woman gives birth, all of the pain that she has for the giving birth and everything that goes along with that is mechaperes al avono shel chava. All of the pain that she has while she's in the labor and delivery and throughout the pregnancy will be mechaper for the terrible sin of Chava so many thousands of years ago. Now writes Rabbi Yaakov Hillel, and even though the Zohar HaKadosh does say that, Bechalzos, he says, Osim kolts tatzdiki, we will do whatever we can to lighten the load of the woman, to make her not have pain while she's in labor and delivery or throughout the pregnancy. We will do whatever we can to make a woman comfortable. And therefore he says, obviously, lo ra'ino mi shepotza pam mitzapzef. Never have you heard anybody who says, why are you giving the woman Pitocin? And why are you giving the woman all kinds of things that are going to drug her up and make her not realize the pain that she's in, or to minimize the pain? Don't you know the Zohar HaKadosh says the woman's supposed to have pain in order that she should be mechaper on avodo shachava? Therefore writes Rabbi Yaakov Hillel, yes, the Zohar HaKadosh writes that, but that's Kabbalah. When it comes to la halacha l'maisa, when it comes to a woman who's in pain, we will try whatever we can to minimize her pain and to make her feel as comfortable as possible. And certainly over here he says, when it comes to a bris milah, we have to try to make the person as comfortable as possible. The truth is, there's a fundamental question when it comes to bris milah in general, and that is the mitzvah to actually perform the act? Let's say, shaking lulav. The mitzvah is you have to shake the lulav. Blowing the shofar, the mitzvah is l'shmar kala shofar. You need someone to blow, and we all have to be active listeners. Now the question is over here, is the mitzvah by bris milah really that I have to perform the act, or is the mitzvah what we would refer to as a mitzvah shebit totzah? That all we want really is the end result, which is the state of being. I want, God says, that every Jewish male should be circumcised. Not that you have to go and do the circumcision, but I want that everybody should be circumcised. And if that is the case, if we assume that the mitzvah is just that in the end of the day, everyone should be circumcised properly, then there's nothing to even discuss here. What does it matter if there's pain, if there's no pain? If all we want is that the child should have a circumcision, then there's no real discussion to get started. Now, even though you'll say the pasuk says that you have a mitzvah by Yom HaShmini Yimol B'Sar Laso, sounds like you have a mitzvah to go and actively be engaged in the mitzvah of Bris Milah. So the Acharonim say that would not be a real proof, because after all the Torah says, Chag HaSukkos Tase Lecha, you have to go and build the sukkah. So what? Let's say somebody is not healthy enough to build their own sukkah, or not strong enough to schlep all the panels and everything. So what are you going to say? I'm not performing my mitzvah of sukkah because I hired somebody else to do it for me, or I have neighbors or friends who are nice enough to do it on my behalf? That's not the case. Or let's say, yesterday I went to visit somebody who was not able to put on his own tefillin. His mind is still in a healthy state of being, but he's just not healthy enough to get the tefillin around his arm on his own. So I went and I put on the tefillin for him. Would you say that that person is now not in fulfillment of the mitzvah of tefillin because it says, Ukshartem la'os al yadecha, you have to put it on your hand? Of course not. The mitzvah is you have to wear the tefillin every day. However it gets on your head, however it gets on your arm, that's a different question. But we don't assume that just because you cannot do it yourself, it's considered as if you haven't done it at all. And so too over here by bris milah, even though the Torah does say that you have a mitzvah of bayom hashmini yimol b'sar alaso, that doesn't necessarily mean that if somebody else does it on your behalf, that it's not considered to be a performance of the mitzvah at all. Now, this is the general assumption, and this is what many, many Achronim have suggested. Rabbi Avadia Yosef raises the question as well. And he writes that this came up also when many Russian Jews came over from the Soviet Union, and many of them were adults, and many of them were unable to have a bris milah because there was a great danger to their lives were they to perform the mitzvah in the former Soviet Union. The question was, now that we have all these males coming to Eretz Yisrael, are we able to perform the bris milah while using an anesthesia at the same time? So he comes at it from a completely different angle, and I think it's very fascinating to consider where he's coming from. So he says, well, after all, look at the good old Art School Siddur. What does the Art School Siddur say every day, Shachris and Ma'ariv, when we say Kriya Shema? There's a little small letters that say in there, Yechavein Latzeis B'mitzvah Zu, right? It says when we get to the Parsha Vayomer, you have to say, when you say Ani Hashem Elokeichem Emes, or Ani Hashem Elokeichem Sheratzeis Yeschem Eretz Mitzrayim, the Art School Siddur reminds us, have in mind that you're performing the mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. Right? Everybody seen that? So why do they stick that into the Siddur? Why is that necessary? The answer is because the Shulchan Aruch paskins that we assume mitzvos tzrichos kavana. While performing a mitzvah, a person has to have in mind, has to be aware of what it is that they're doing. You have to be conscious of the fact that you're performing a mitzvah, and therefore, in the Siddur it states that when you say those words every day, I am the God who took you out of Mitzrayim, we should all have in mind, now I'm actively performing the mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim that I'm obligated to do every day. Well, so to over here, writes Rabbi Avadia Yosef, if you're going to put someone to sleep, how can they have in mind that they're performing the mitzvah if they're sleeping? And therefore, he writes, I don't understand. How would you be able to perform the mitzvah in such a way if the person is not aware of what it is that they're doing? So he tries to compare it to the story of Yibum. We know that every so often there's an unfortunate institution of Yibum when a person passes away without children, a man passes away without children, and his wife is left behind, so we know that she is officially supposed to perform the mitzvah of Yibum, which means she's supposed to get married to the brother-in-law, and they're supposed to live with one another. So the Gemara says, what happens if they perform the act of Yibum while he's sleeping? So the Gemara says, that obviously is not going to work. Well, maybe that would stand to reason here as well, that if a person is sleeping, they cannot perform the mitzvah, the same way by Yibum, they cannot perform the mitzvah. So Rabbi Avadia Yosef gets into this whole discussion, and he tries to figure out whether it's comparable or perhaps not. Then he gets into a further discussion and he wants to know. He says, well, maybe you can draw a distinction over here because the person who is having the procedure done on them is not the one who's actually performing the mitzvah. The mohel is doing the mitzvah. And therefore he says, as long as the mohel is not sleeping, which I hope he's not, as long as the mohel is not sleeping, it shouldn't pose a problem at all. So he gets into a further discussion whether or not that is the case. And he says, but after all, isn't the mohel serving as my proxy? Isn't the mohel serving in my stead? Really, I'm supposed to do it on my own. I hand it off to somebody else to perform the mitzvah on my behalf, but if somebody else is standing in my place, how can I not be available myself? How can I be sleeping? How can I not be aware of what it is that I'm supposed to be doing? So this is a question, and he gets into a test case. Let's say, unfortunately, when you have a husband and wife who get divorced, so we know that a get has to be given from the husband to the wife. Now, what if the husband and wife do not want to see each other ever again, they don't want to deal with each other ever again, and they say, I'm going to set up a proxy in my place to give the get from the husband to the wife. I don't want to see her again. She doesn't want to see me. We're going to have other people doing all the middle work on our behalf. And the question is, sounds wonderful. The Gemara says we do have an institution of shlichus, and it's not a problem at all. However, what if a person asks somebody to stand in their place, to be the shaliach, to be the proxy, and then they go to sleep? What would be the halacha? Would you say, well, now I'm sleeping, so I wouldn't be able to give it on my own, and therefore nobody else can give it on my behalf while I'm sleeping? Or do you say, no, what do you mean? You still are worthy of giving the get. If you would only wake up, you would be able to do it on your own, and therefore you can have someone else do it in your place. So that's the same kind of question here. Yes, I was put under anesthesia, local or general anesthesia, and I myself might not be able to perform it, but does that take away from my ability to put a proxy in place to do it on my behalf? Would you say that's the same as the get or not? Or there are those who argue, maybe we should say this is not the same as sleeping, because after all, maybe sleeping is just sleeping, but if I'm put to sleep by an external intervention, maybe we should assume that that's even worse. So let's say, take for example, our same case of a get. Let's say I have a husband who instructs a proxy to give the get to his wife on his behalf. And now he goes and he gets drunk in the bar. Right? So he's totally not able to give the get on his own, because he doesn't have his mind with him. He got drunk and now he's unable to do it because of an external intervention. Shouldn't that be the same as somebody who has anesthesia that is also an external intervention, to make them fall asleep. Would you assume that those two are comparable, or would you assume that perhaps they're not? So these are all very interesting aspects of this very general question, but the overwhelming opinion of most of the contemporary poskim is that it would be mutter, certainly b'makam atzorech, certainly in a case where we have an adult who is coming to be a ger, who's coming to convert and needs to have a bris mila, and it's a very painful procedure for them. Certainly most achronim would assume that this is something that would be permissible, even though it's something that maybe never existed thousands of years ago, but they didn't have anesthesia thousands of years ago. Rameir Arik, one of the great gedolim in Europe, wrote in his sefer Imre Yosher that maybe we should assume that this is not the case. He said that, after all, we have a medrash, where the medrash says that Avraham Avinu had great pains when he did the bris mila, and after all, he says, the Gemara already does have an indication that we had an idea of anesthesia already in the times of the Gemara, and yet we never find that it was used by a bris mila. And therefore, he says, maybe that should indicate that this is something that we should not be involved in him. Maybe this is something that's inappropriate at the time of a bris mila. Most others assume that he is incorrect in his assumption. Number one, you cannot prove anything from a medrash that tells you that Avraham Avinu had some pain by the bris mila. Ein lemeidim min ha'agados. That is the general rule. We cannot draw a halachic conclusion from some story that the medrash tells us about the bris mila of Avraham Avinu. And furthermore, yes, it might be true that the Gemara has this idea of anesthesia already in the times of Chazal, but very often the Acharonim say, lo ra'inu eino raya. Just because you don't find that anywhere in history that we had such a precedent doesn't mean that it's not the case. The Shach writes that in Yerideh all the time, that we don't assume just because it's not documented that that means it's not true. So we have to reevaluate and reassess in our own generation to figure out, is this something that's acceptable or perhaps not? And as Moshe Feinstein and many others of his ilk had agreed, this is something that most would assume is certainly going to be acceptable.